This is Steve Traxel, and I use the pitch like I like my barbecue, low and slow. You're listening to Baseball and Barbecue with Jeff and Lynn.
Studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York. This is episode number 220 of Baseball and Barbecue. I'm Jeff the Oak Coot Cohen, and that's Leonard Hollywood Aberman. And we welcome you back to our program, Leonard.
Wow. Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here. So glad. Episode 220. I love the the fives, the tens, you know, when you get to, for some reason, 220 seems like a big episode.
Is it?
Well, I think it is because, Jeff, we've got two big guests, so it must be. Yeah. We got a baseball guest and a barbecue guest, right?
Well, let me correct you there. we don't have a baseball guest. We have a softball guest.
Oh, yeah. But... You know what? Fast pitch softball.
Yes, we do. Yes.
And I bet you that they could probably strike out some of those major league hitters.
They just might.
Wow. I mean, that ball, that watching them play, and we talk about that with our guests. So let's tell you who our guests are. All right. Let's not leave the audience in suspense, Jeff. They hate when we do that. We've got Chris Marks. Chris Marks may be, well, I don't know if he's the winningest guy in barbecue, but he's certainly one of. And his company is Three Little Pigs. He talks all about his competition career and his family, the business, how he is, you know, carrying on his parents' legacy. And Jeff, he was just, what a great guy to talk to. A lot of fun. That was a lot
yes,
of fun.
Definitely, yes.
And then, of course, we have a fast pitch softball player who is now, she's an assistant coach. And that is Elizabeth Mason. She's going to talk all about the game, all about her career. Two great interviews. We're going to get right to them. And I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but I know everyone's waiting to hear that you're going to have a rant. So, yeah, I know. I wanted people to not skip ahead to the next interview after one ends. Right.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
Cause you know, they love your rants. All right. So let me tell everybody, with the NFL playoffs right around the corner and the NBA season in full swing, BetOnline has you covered with all the up-to-the-second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and information on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. Head there today to get into the action and see all the updated odds. Remember to use your promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. It is where the game starts.
And how are we going to be starting, Leonard?
Let's get right to it. Let's get to Chris Marks of Three Little Pigs. He's going to talk about everything under the sun with barbecue. I'm looking forward to it. Baseball and barbecue listeners, our guest, if he was a baseball team, he wouldn't be the Yankees. I don't think he has as many. Maybe he might actually be the New York Yankees.
Yankees or Dodgers isn't a bad play.
Yeah, of barbecue. The man has just 8 American Royals. That alone is enough. He's got 50 regional championships, 24 perfect scores. over 600 individual barbecue awards. He's got rubs and sauces that you're going to learn all about. He is one of the greats of barbecue, a very humble man from everything I've heard. And the one thing that he would like to have on his tombstone, not that he's going anywhere so soon.
Oh,
but,
almost did that in 18.
But he'd like to have it say he was a nice guy. So
absolutely.
So we'll talk about all of that. Welcome to Baseball and Barbecue, Chris Marks.
Well, very humbled and very excited. I'm a huge baseball guy. Grew up with it. Like I was saying, I grew up with Whitey Herzog's son. Grew up in, you know, the 70s around the Kauffman Stadium with Brett and that whole crew. And, you know, I'm a baseball guy.
All right. Well,
that's why we have you on, Chris. We knew that. The barbecue.
That's boring.
Actually, let's start with that because Jeff and I did, we celebrated our 200th episode this summer, and we rewarded ourselves by taking a trip to Kansas City, and it was amazing.
Yeah. Went to Slaps, went to Jack Stack, went to Arthur Bryant's. Well, great.
Stadium.
Yeah. So Jack Stack, I'm actually going to Jack Stack for my wife's birthday here in a couple weeks. That's how much I like Jack Stack. I love Jack Stack. We're heading to the one in Lee's Summit, and it's just a great place, been around forever, and it was my dad's favorite.
Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, let's talk about your dad, because I've done a lot of research. One of our guests once said, boy, you really dug deep to find stuff. I said, I dug so deep you could put a body in it. So
oh boy.
I did a lot of research, a lot of research on you. And Chris, so tell us how you got your start in barbecue and your love of barbecue.
Well, my love of barbecue we've had for quite a while, but it really started because my dad, who was a senior exec at Hallmark Cards, corporate Kansas City, retired. And my mom said, find him something to do. He's driving me absolutely crazy. And, you know, he'd been sort of meddling around in the barbecue deal. And him and my uncle, they made their own little smoker. So for his retirement party, we bought him an Oklahoma Joe trailer. Now, I'm talking the original Oklahoma Joe built by Joe Davison of Perry, Oklahoma. And what had happened is, you know, it was on a trailer. It's a big old barrel. He was hooked. He was absolutely hooked. And what it did is it just enlightened his life for the latter part of his life, made a great life for him. He had friends all over the world, and he was a big part of the KCBS, him and my mom. They helped really develop it back in the 90s, early 90s. You know, I sort of fell in with him because my mom, he had a tendency to wander. He was sort of that guy that, you know, just wandered around wanting to talk to everybody and not paying attention. So my mom brought me in, and I was pretty much the cook.
At what age?
27.
You were 27?
That's when I started. And I'm 63 right now.
Okay. It's a good run. That's good.
It's been an unbelievable run. And it was a very passionate hobby. Me and myself and my sisters are all athletes. My mom's an athlete. My dad was not. And this was sort of something that brought us all together. And it was just, it was so heartfelt, Leonard. I really can't explain it. How we grew just so tight because of barbecue.
That's nice.
You would never think.
Yeah.
And very blessed. Yeah. And they've left a great legacy in barbecue.
Yeah, that's nice. What you said you were into, you were an athlete. What sport?
I bet it was baseball, football, and swimming.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was baseball. I had a great run of baseball. I got to start when I was these were large schools in Kansas City. We had about 700-800, which is a big in our classes. And I got to start when I was a sophomore all the way through my senior year.
Wow.
Did ended up wounded by the end of my senior year because I was a catcher and never went past that. But I still have the love for baseball. All my kids played softball or baseball, and I just loved it.
It never leaves you. Never leave you.
Never leaves you.
Immediately. Yep, absolutely.
Lefty.
So, you know, you talked about your father getting you started in barbecue. And now I see, you know, on your website, 50 national barbecue champions, 600 awards. You must have gone all over the United States. I don't know if you went internationally to do barbecues, but tell us about the barbecue community. I know, you know, we've talked before we started recording that you know some of our guys. You know Artie Davis, you know Mitch Benjamin. I mean, you must have talked to us about the barbecue community and where you barbecue has taken you.
Well, okay, let's start about the barbecue community as it started.
Okay.
When we started in the barbecue community, it was really sort of a down home. You didn't see a lot of these big trailers. You didn't see any of that. Most of us worked out of tents, and we had some little smokers. I mean, our smokers cost, you know, R2-D2 type smokers, Weber Smoky Mountain,
right,
things like that. That's where this hobby really started. Now, what it's done sort of grown to now where everybody has to have big trailer and big dualies and pull all over. But where it started at that core guy who just wanted to learn barbecue. When we learn it, we got pretty good at it. Let's see who we can beat. So I'm that guy. I want to see who I can beat. And that's, again, where it started. It sort of evolved into this huge, now, you know, you have to have, you know, big sponsors. You have to do 50 contests a year. You know, Jeff, we only did maybe most 15 contests a year. And we traveled the Midwest primarily. We'd head down south. We'd do Louisiana. We'd do Mississippi, Alabama, places like that. Colorado, Frisco, unbelievable place to do barbecue in Frisco, Colorado, between the mountains. A lot of Iowa, Nebraska, Wisconsin. And places like that is really where our core was at. When we were doing this, there wasn't a lot past that. You would head more up to the upper Midwest. You wouldn't see any barbecue contest. They were really concerned in our area. So you see Oklahoma, Texas, Missouri, Nebraska, Kansas, not even really Illinois. But we had a majority of the contest for the first 15 years. And it's really branched out since there. But that's where it's grown. And it's sort of grown from the good old boys to now where it's more almost like a NASCAR. So you almost have you have to have that sponsor. You have to have, you know, somebody pumping you. You know, for a season, some of these guys are dropping $100,000 to $150,000.
Wow.
In just expenses. And again, that's not where it started. That has a tendency to push a lot of people out now. Of course, you know, I do barbecue classes all across the country, and I hear a lot of that is, you know, we're only doing one or two contests this year. It's gotten too expensive. You know, we just really want to do it for fun, but it's just gotten to the point where I just can't do it anymore.
I remember there was a competition. It was a KCBS. It was in Staten Island. And we went to that. And there was one area they have for all the trailers. You know, you get all the trailers are there.
Yes.
And the people in the trailers, you don't see them. And then there's an area where they have the people that have there were tents set up. There were people with their Weber Smoky Mountains. And they're sitting there and they're talking to us. And I was asking all sorts of questions because at the time I was first starting to get into barbecue. I mean, I had a grill, but I didn't have a smoker and I wanted to learn. And we were sitting there and they said, sit there. They didn't offer any food, but they said, you know, ask us anything you want to know. And then the trailers and the, you know, it's almost like, I hate to bring it back to baseball, but it's like the small market teams and the big teams.
Oh boy, that is spot on. Great call. What you'll notice with the small market teams is how giving they are with information. And that's the way we always were. My one thing my parents always said is once we're done, give it away. You know, let everybody know what you're doing. And that's, we pretty much did that anyway, all the time. But that is such a great conclusion on the current state of barbecue right now, because you do have your little guys and then the big guys. And do the little guys have a chance against the big guys? You know,
not much.
Good call. You know, who can spend $700 million on a player?
Right. That's right.
You know it?
I think one of those rigs was Shohei Ohtani's.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Good call.
Exactly. Yes. But, you know, you talk about sponsorship. So these teams that have all these sponsors, they, I guess they get given meat or from the meat producers, or they buy them.
They actually get a discount.
Yes.
Some will get meat, but most are given a discount.
Right.
That's sort of the way the sponsorships work. Now, there's a lot of private sponsorships where they'll give them money. Now, some of the bigger teams, you're going to have a probably 15, 20 of the teams. And those are going to be the guys who are doing 30 and 40 contests a year, which I think is absolutely insane. And they're probably getting maybe a big sponsor, $20,000. But again, it comes down to, you know, the big guy and versus the little guy. And that guy who does that contest 30 and 40 times a year, he has such a better edge over some guy who's just going to pop up and try.
Right.
And what happens is that guy who pops up and tries, yeah, this was okay. I spent a lot of money. Will I do it the next time? Maybe.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
Yes. So, yes.
Again, it's sort of where it's migrating to. And it's unfortunate. But again, it's just like you watch NASCAR.
So let's talk about Three Little Pigs. That's your website. That's your brand. And you are the CBBQE, the Chief Barbecue
Expert. I get to make up my own.
That's right. Exactly. And the website is threelittlepigsbbq.com. Now, there's a dash between three and little and pigs. And
I was never able to get that other one. Oh, boy.
Yeah, because I went to that other one and it came up. It was like a food truck or something.
Yeah, it's a food truck. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So don't forget the dashes. But yeah, tell us about your brand, Three Little Pigs, Rubs and Sauces. I mean, it's tremendous.
It's a total morph for barbecue. Okay. I was an IT guy 28 years. Would I think right now I'd be talking barbecue? No, absolutely not. Three Little Pigs started from and here's sort of a little bit of backstory too. My father was the one who really started all this. Me, my mom and dad, and my uncle moved into it after my father passed away. My father passed away 1 month before we won the Invitational at the American Royal for the first time.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't even going to do it. I was so flat. I was out of it. I mean,
right.
But it didn't. So it started there. And he had made the sauces, the competition barbecue sauce. He had made the Chipotle sauce, and he had made a bunch of the rubs already. And those were his and my mom's and myself. We developed them during competition seasons. What a great honor is I took the competition sauce and I took the money that we won with the American Royal and I developed it. And that's where the rubs and the sauces really started. I continued to develop on as we won more. I would use them to develop the rubs. So it's my legacy to my parents.
That's beautiful.
That's what the rubs and the sauces are about. They're the legacy to my parents.
Right.
And I'm very proud of them. They do very well across the world. But again, they're heartfelt to me. That's how they started. And I take them very serious. I work at it very hard. I would just calculate my classes for last year. I did do my 500th class last year.
Oh, wow.
Barbecue specific. And that was done down at Branson, Missouri. So I promote the rubs and sauces with the barbecue classes. And I'll do about 43 to 45 a year. And that's hopping it. I'm moving all over. Biggest territories are usually upper Midwest. I do a lot in Chicago. Of course, Chicago's got 9 million people. And they love barbecue up there. And they would have me every week if they can get me up in Chicago. But again, I like to morph the business into really doing the rubs and sauces and doing the classes. I don't cater. I don't have a restaurant because that's like really hard, guys, by the way.
Yes.
I mean, I'd rather drive around, talk to people instead of work behind a counter. But that's sort of where it's all came from. It came from really that starting of, you know, how can I build that legacy to my parents? And again, my dad's passed away 26 years now. And my mom's been right at about 15 or 16. Mm. And it's still just in my heart, like they were here yesterday and talking barbecue. And, you know, that's my story. And that's why I take it so serious. And I promote, everybody goes, why do you work so hard? I go, because it's my parents' legacy. And that is, truthfully, that's why.
Yeah. And your sauces and rubs, you told me earlier that they're in Ace Hardware, what, 5,800 stores?
Oh, they're in Ace. Where they're total overall about 55,000 stores, I think, is what they're telling me.
Yeah. They're Ace. By us. We have plenty of Aces by us.
Yes.
And they're owned by, they're all Costello Ace Hardware stores. That's one of my favorite things to do.
It's, well, let me tell you what, Ace has got it together in barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
We're fortunate enough out in our area to have Westlake Ace, and they really, really knew how to do barbecue. And, you know, I was just at the Ace show in Orlando, and I tell you what, it's outstanding. They just do an outstanding job in barbecue.
Yeah.
And they get it. And I think a reason they get it is because they worked with the guys from Kansas City and saying, hey, guys, here's a real niche you can fill. Nobody else really wants to deal with these guys. And they took off with it. And it's done extremely well. Yeah. And Ace is just good to work with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their shelves are stacked.
They take barbecue serious.
Yeah.
You good know, stuff. You don't put one or two.
Yeah.
You know, you put them all. Yeah. And you see what the customers want, then you migrate down from there. I'm also in Lowe's Hardware. I've been in Lowe's probably for, I don't know, probably 10 years. And they carry the Touch of Cherry and Championship. Bass Pro has been very, very good to me for about 10 or 12 years. Of course, corporate Springfield, Missouri. Mm-hmm. True Value. Orscheln, which is, again, you probably don't know Orscheln out in the East Coast, but that's a big hardware store here. But again, been very fortunate. And I work with a great partner, Old World Spices. Unbelievable. Started this market.
Yeah. That's your co-packer?
My co-packer. They're the ones who opened up this hardware market for everybody.
You obviously, 8 times winning the American Royal. Biggest, people will argue whether it's the, you know, some people will argue other competitions. The American Royal.
It's the biggest in the world. Just no getting around it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Everybody argues. Yeah.
Right. Do they ask you to be there? They, you know, it's like almost like a golf tournament where they want their, some players don't go to every tournament. Does the American Royal make sure that you're there every year?
Great question. So this was my 30th year this year. And truthfully, no. I don't really know, since they've had such the transition of new people in there, they even have a clue about their legacy.
That's a shame.
I really don't. Because they have a great legacy just with people and barbecue. And, you know, it's just, I really don't think they understand their legacy. Because, no, the new people wouldn't know me from Adam.
Yeah.
But the old, you know, the guy originally who started it, which was James Patterson, who, if you ever remember that name, he was the owner of Cerner. He knew me because, again, we presented a great, you know, we were just, again, we were that team that helped everybody. And that's what he liked.
What changed from your first American Royal to now?
Oh, number one's commercialism. So our first American Royal would have been, 30 years ago. I mean, so probably 92 or 3, right in there, was our first American Royal, I think. What I've noticed is, again, commercialism, to where it was everybody in the American Royal, we'd all walk around and talk to everybody. Now what you're seeing is you're seeing big parties. Again, you look at the, you know, I'm going to have a tent now with 500, 600 people coming into it, instead of a tent of 4 or 5 barbecuers. Who am I going to? And that tent's going to have 500 people paying $20 to get in. So, again, I think it's gone a lot more commercial than competition seriousness.
It's like,
does it still have the legacy as the best in the world? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But again, as it's migrated through different kinds of, I want to say, groups of people, I think they've sort of focused it more on revenue than true barbecue.
Right. Would you say it's like the Super Bowl, Chris? Because, you know, they.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. That's.
Yeah.
It's there. You know, that you get all these companies that bring in their whoever come into to it.
And a halftime entertainer.
Absolutely. Oh, there are. There's so many parties you can't understand. It's so noisy. Have you ever been to one?
No.
It is just unbelievable, especially when it was down in the west bottoms of Kansas City. And it was just like it was under viaducts. It was wild. It was like you're out in a field. And it was just wild. Just the people, it was just raw. And now out at the racetrack, they've really cleaned it up a lot. They do a great job with it, in and out, super simple. But again, it just still doesn't have that legacy presence as you would down in the bottoms. Because it can get pretty nasty down there.
Let's talk about your cooker of choice. When you go to the American Royale, when you're doing any competition, what are you using?
Actually, I have two, and they're both American made. Of course, my Oklahoma Joe. Mm-hmm. And it's in the process of being rebuilt right now. My cousin's actually rebuilding it, and that's after about 35 years. So it's the big barrel tank, and it's basically the Horizon. If you go look at a Horizon, that is what my Oklahoma Joe is. I also use a model called the Goodwin Smoker, which is where basically it's an over-under, and I used the Marshall for years, and I was fortunate enough to work there for about 7 or 8 years, and I redesigned a lot of their models, and that mm-hmm. Marshall is my redesign.
When Jeff and I don't think we were prepared when we got off that plane in Kansas City. It is, barbecue is a main focus. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's a big sign there for the American Royal. Meet Mitch has a restaurant right in the airport.
So you've flown into the new airport.
Yeah.
Yes.
The new airport. Yeah.
Well, I was just there yesterday. So when you pull out of the airport, what does it say? Kansas City barbecue. Huge sign. Meet our mayor, Quentin Lucas, right there. Barbecue. Right.
Yeah. The gift shops there. I mean, it's just sauces and rubs and you know, funny sayings all about barbecue and shirts and hats. And it is definitely a town that is barbecue is a main theme. You've got over 100 barbecue restaurants in Kansas City, right? Is that?
So it is a true destination for barbecue. Absolutely. There's a new one. So what we do in barbecue, so understand the different regions. We have a lot of regionality, and I teach a lot of regions. So I do a lot of work in Texas. I do a lot of work in Chicago, St. Louis. We're all different regions. Okay. So again, what it is it's about the barbecue. It's about how to take a method and technique and get to that area to where I can make it regional. Mm-hmm. And that's usually what I teach in class. I don't teach competition class. Mm-hmm. I teach to the guy who wants to be really good. And I teach more science than I do anything else. I teach about smoke. I teach about fire. And I teach about heat and how to get there. But where I was going with this is with Kansas City, we're starting to see some more regionality of Texas. So whereas traditionally Kansas City, we're going to have a lot of sauce. We're going to primarily cook beef, chicken. We weren't big pork cookers in Kansas City other than loins. Pulled pork up until 10 years ago, nobody knew what pulled pork was. Mm. I mean, we use sliced loin. And you go to Bryant's, you go to Gates, you get sliced loin. You don't get pulled pork. You still don't it there. You still get your slice, which I love, by the way. So I'm working with a guy out of Raytown. He's more of a Texas style cooker. So no sauce, a lot of pepper, salt, garlic, and a lot of sausage. And it's a great restaurant. But like I say, it's don't ever snub anybody's region. Right. Try it. You can try all this different stuff, you know, and that's the great thing about this hobby is try it all. You know, so many people get caught up that it's got to be Kansas City. It's got to be Texas. You got to cook your brisket fat side up. You got to do this. You got to do that. No, have fun with it. And that's great. What I do with it now. I just have fun with it.
That's great advice. You know, Len mentioned some rubs earlier, and I see on your website you have new products coming out for 2024. And if you can talk about it with our audience, that'd be great. Yeah.
Well, again, as everything develops, I get requests from retailers. We want more. And I'm one guy. But again, I'm fortunate enough to work with Old World, who has the science, the food scientist. and I'll go in and we'll have multiple meetings and we'll develop new rubs. These rubs, a lot of them, I've worked for years on them. It's just, again, it's all about timing on how to bring them out and when to bring them out. So I'm coming out with a pecan rub. Yes, I've loved pecan forever. Actually, my dad had a pecan rub, and this is part of it. It's not the whole thing because it would have been too expensive. But this is a new rub. I'm coming out with a couple rubs where I've been requested to put a little heat into them. So when people talk about heat, you know, we talk about cayenne, we talk about different kinds of peppers to use. So we're doing this a little bit unique. We're going to use serrano peppers, which, again, a lot of people don't use. Of course, I'm going to use a jalapeno and a chipotle, which I'm a chipotle guy. I love chipotle type flavor because of how the chipotle works. If you understand how the chipotle works, it works what we call front to back. So basically, you get a little bit on your tongue, you have a little sweetness, and then it works back. But it's not overwhelming like a habanero.
Right.
So again, it gives you a good bite. You never want to do anything too hot because people won't buy it. So the next one is going to be a spicy maple, and it is outstanding. My son-in-law, I mean, we've been testing it out, and he's taking all my product. He keeps taking it all. Of course, all my kids take all my product.
Sure.
You know, that's why my freezers are always empty when I come home. But again, the spicy honey maple is unbelievable on pork. He's just going crazy with the pork. But what he's done now is he'll take the Texas beef and he'll mix the spicy honey maple on brisket and also on beef ribs. And it's just going to work. Mm-hmm. It's a great rub. It's just a great, unique rub. When you open it up, you get that great maple hit, and it will do well. The other rub I'm doing, and this is by request, and my dad had done this for years, we're doing a lemon pepper, and we're putting a little bite in that lemon pepper. So it's sort of a spicy lemon pepper.
Cool.
Again, sort of been on the back burner for 3 or 4 years. As again, it comes down to timing. And the timing's good right now for me. Of course, you know, going through it to develop a rubber sauce is not an easy thing.
Now, I want to let the people know that on the label, there is the type of food that you can put that works best with these rubs.
Beef, absolutely.
Chicken, fish, pork. I mean,
I need that.
So people know what works best. So that's a great ad that you have on the label there.
Yeah, that is
and
good.
That does help because people don't know.
Right. Yeah.
But again, you know, that, and that's been just the ability to be able to do that again, working with a great partner, that really makes it, I mean, just work.
And what about the smoke and cherry pretzels? Now that is,
well, unfortunately, those have sort of gone away.
Oh,
and that was sort of a try. I probably should take that off. That was sort of a try. We did some pretzels and they were so good, but they're so expensive to make.
All right.
And the other thing is the life cycle of a pretzel is not very long. They have a tendency to bland out really quick. But that was actually a toffee. We made a toffee with a touch of cherry rub. And we put that toffee on that pretzel. Man, it was good. I mean, was not good for you, but it was good. But again, what we noticed is the costing to develop was just way out there.
Well, then I don't want to talk about it because I feel like.
Oh, it was geez. Good. Oh, man, they were good.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for telling me. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you cannot get those. Don't even look at them.
Not get those anymore.
They're not available.
It costs too much to make.
Yeah. Well, maybe you go on Shark Tank and you get an investor. And
No. That sounds like really hard. That's stressful. I'm going the other way. Stress. I don't like that stress.
Right.
Exactly. So, Chris, what do you think came first then? The competitions, more of those, or was it the TV shows that then created more competitions? What was first?
I think you said it exactly correct. The competitions first. Competitions. Remember, we have multiple sanctioning bodies across the United States, actually across the world. Of course, KCBS being the biggest, you have LSB out of Texas, ICBA out of Texas, other organizations have been around a long time. I think that's where it started. Now, understand the shows came from the South. Okay, you don't see any kind of Texas or really true Midwest guys in those shows. Those are primarily from the South. Again, the show started there, but again, they brought it to another level, just put more exposure onto it. But I think right now what's happening is we're having a flattening of what I call the curve. The curve's sort of starting to flatten out a little bit. People are sort of going their own ways. I think YouTube during the COVID was pretty popular, but I think YouTube sort of faded out also. We actually call that YouTube University and barbecue because so many people get confused by watching YouTube University. So I sort of see that flattening out also. The one thing I don't see flattening out is the ability to do classes. I've already got 35 on the books for 24, and I could probably do 50 if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And so again, I think the hobby's flattening a little bit and people are sort of looking for direction. SCA, if you notice about the stake, I think the stake's done stake associations have done a really good job of sort of picking up the ball and running with it a little bit. And now, you know, so we got a little bit cheaper way to do this. You know, it's not that expensive. It's a 1-day event, you know, blah, blah, blah. So again, I think SCA's done a pretty good job of picking that up and running with that ball to help those guys who really put off by the extreme costs and extreme time. I mean, you talk about a contest, you're there on Friday, you're cooking all Friday night, Saturday, you're prepping the whole week before, and then that whole weekend, you're cleaning up all day Sunday and getting ready to do it all over again.
Right.
And whereas an SCA contest, that's like a 1-day deal.
Which amazes me that the people that are doing 30, 40 or more contests a year, that's their life. I mean, they work during the week and then Friday or whatever, they're prepping and they're at the
Absolutely.
Contest. And then it's unbelievable.
I just think that's a little bit overwhelming. You know, and there's guys that are doing 40 and 50 contests a year. And it's just, and the amazing thing is, what awards are you trying to get? Well, I'm trying to get team of the year. Well, how much does that pay? Oh, that doesn't pay a lot. So you know, what's the deal, you know? I just don't get it. How's that?
Yeah.
You know, I love cruising around your website. Again, it's 3-little-pigs-bbq.com. And if you go on there, I looked at some of your videos, and you were trimming a brisket. And if anybody wants to trim a brisket, you have to watch this video because Chris does a great job of showing you how to actually do the trimming. So, Chris, could you take us through that?
Well, again, when it comes to barbecue, everybody makes it so damn hard, and it's so easy. And, you know, you get out there. Trimming a brisket, we do different styles. I mean, we have a Midwest style, you have a Texas style. I do primarily Midwest. So we'll separate the point from the flat because we like those burn ends, don't we?
Oh, yeah. We love the burn ends.
Meat candy.
I know. And that's actually what I teach in class. I teach the Midwest style brisket and I teach people how to separate the point from the flat. If you want to cook them separate, do it. And so I'll show them how to point, you know, cook the flat separate and cook the point. And, you know, so trimming of a brisket is just really simple to do. You just don't get overwhelmed with it. You trim off a hard fat. You don't need to trim the brisket down to a 7x7 like a lot of the comp guys do. I'll get the fattest, ugliest brisket because that's going to have the most flavor to it because it's going to be fatty. And that fat is what we use in barbecue. Mm-hmm. I mean, the lower and slower we cook it, the more moist it's going to be.
Yep.
And amazing thing about I won first place at the American Royal Invitational, perfect score with briskets I bought at the Sam's Club on the way down to the contest.
There you go.
You mean it wasn't Wagyu?
Oh, no, it was not Wagyu. I'm too cheap for that, man. No way am I paying for Wagyu. But again, when we talk about trimming just a brisket, it's just simple to do. And we just need to take our time. And so many people get so wrapped up because they see everybody, oh, it's hard, it's hard. No, it's not. It's really not hard. You're separating out the hard fat. You're cleaning the brisket up a little bit. And you know the great thing about a brisket is put it on the damn smoker and let it smoke.
Right.
Because that's what it is. And And if you have any heavy fat, trim it off once it's done smoked, once it's trimmed. It's simple to just pull the fat off if you have to. I mean, people want to trim every ounce of fat off a brisket, and that fat's our flavor.
Sure.
And the other thing is I don't do, and this is like, you know, this is blasphemy to a lot of guys. When I teach a class, I teach people how to do it without foil.
Okay.
I teach people pure pit barbecue. You don't need foil. You don't need paper. Just need to learn how to cook and have patience. And remember, we talked about the three, the smoke, the fire, the heat. That's what it's about. You know, yeah. We just, again, make it way too hard. I would just taught a friend that I've been friends with since high school. I just taught him how to do a brisket. And he goes, this is too easy. It can't be this easy. Yeah, it is. He says, I was on YouTube University and I just watched this video. And this guy from Texas, he was showing us, and he said you had to do this, and you had to go melt beef tallow, and you had to put it in the paper, and like, oh my God, no, we just make it too hard.
They do say
I don't, I don't spritz, I don't mop. You know what I do? So I put the brisket on, I go away,
okay.
The smoker smoke, and I let the brisket cook, and I'll come back in 8 to 10 hours, and oh, okay, we're almost there.
Yeah, that's simple enough. Type.
Yeah, that's my type of brisket.
And then you add a pellet cooker to it, which makes it even easier.
Chris, what are the three P's?
Passion, persistence, and patience. Where'd you get that?
I told you I did my research.
You did. So those are my three P's.
Yeah.
And that's how I've developed what I do. Again, the passion. My persistence, which I'm almost over stupid in persistence, and more importantly, patience. So many people want immediate results. How do we get to them? We have to understand. We have to think out of the box. I look at what a lot of other people do, and I want to do it better. How do I do it better? I think out of the box, and I work smarter, not harder.
Yep.
And that's where it comes down to the classes.
Speaking of classes, I see on your website, where you're going. I mean, you're doing Indianapolis, Cleveland, Louisville, but I also see you're going international to Canada.
Well, I've done a lot in Canada. I go up to Lethbridge in Calgary, uh-huh. And I've also done Vancouver.
Nice.
So, and they're the best. I love the Canadian. They're the best. I've also cooked in Australia. I've done a month in Australia.
Wow.
And they're phenomenal, nice. Phenomenal cooks, phenomenal people. I was there for a month. I did 10 classes and probably to about 300 people. And I was from Melbourne, Sydney, did a couple in Sydney, went up to Brisbane, Coffs Harbour, Gold Coast. Unbelievable trip of a lifetime.
Wow.
And I got to teach barbecue.
Doesn't suck.
And everything's no, bigger. It seems like everything they're cooking is like big. We had the Grill Sisters on, Desi and I can't remember.
But, Irene.
Yeah. And I saw a video of theirs, and it's just like they're putting, you know, the shrimp, not shrimp on the Barbie, but, you know, they're cooking their fish.
Prawns.
Yeah. And everything's tremendous. It's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it was just fun.
That's amazing.
Fun. Yeah. And again, very blessed. And I do a lot in Canada, just haven't been able to get up there really pre-COVID. Just haven't been able to get back up there. Usually have to fit it in. I go out to Utah. If you guys are familiar with Utah.
Yeah.
I just, my last, in October, I was out in Utah, and I'll go out to Moab and I go four wheeling out there. So that's a nice. Great place to go.
Nice.
Beautiful town.
I also see you're going to be in Phoenix, which is I go a couple times a year to Phoenix. So I see you're going to be
Phoenix,
there too.
Barbecue Island, Mike West, one of the original. I bet I've been working with him 20 years now when he had an itty bitty little store. And now he has four stores and he had a store about the size of my office here. And we started there. Yeah. I've been doing classes in Phoenix, Tempe forever, except in the summer when it's really hot.
Yeah, it's hot there.
It is really hot.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Now, tell us, you are a big baseball fan, so we're just going to This will be, you know, you've been on a lot of podcasts, a lot of shows, a lot of media, but I don't know how many shows ask you about baseball. So let's talk some baseball.
Love it.
So we were at Kauffman Stadium. Great stadium. Love the Royals Hall of Fame there. Obviously, George Brett is a big feature there.
Oh, Brett's the dude.
Yeah. But also, Bo Jackson was prominently featured.
One of our favorites also was the Bo.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bo, when he came to Kansas City, people made fun of him, which just irritated me for no reason whatsoever. You know why they made fun of him?
No.
He stuttered.
Oh,
really bad.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, really bad. And Ewing Kauffman basically said, hey, you're okay. You're okay. But he had a huge chip on his shoulder about, he would never get out. He would never talk to people. He wouldn't get out in public and all that. He was just unbelievable. I loved watching him. And I you know, his story, you ever hear his story about, you know, running the 3.940? He actually supposedly clocked a 3.940. He wasn't even running. He was actually working out at track, and some football coach said, I need you to run this 40 to show these guys how fast you are. And it was scout. He ran a 3.9. It was never official, fastest ever.
Yeah.
But other great things about Bo Jackson, I don't know if you remember in the All-Star game when he led off.
I blasted it.
There it went. But probably the two most famous things. One of them was when Harold Reynolds, they were bragging about how great Harold Reynolds was and how fast he was. He was on first. He hit, I don't know who was up, but Bo was playing left field, and they hit it out the left field, and Harold Reynolds was breaking for second. So he was turning second about the time the ball landed. And it ended up being rolling into the corners. Bo Jackson, and the announcer goes, oh, Harold Reynolds is going to score. Nobody be able to throw him out. Bo Jackson flat-footed it from the wall in left field with his back against the wall. BB to Mark Farland, the catcher, and they tagged him out. Yeah, and wow. He couldn't believe it.
Uh-huh.
But probably Bo's most famous thing in Kansas City is when he ran up the wall.
Ran up the wall.
Yes. They showed, yeah, there's a video there, and they show that. Now, George Brett is actually a big barbecue fan.
Well, I think he's an investor with Mitch Benjamin.
Right. He's one. He's kind of, what is it, the white whale? We've tried to get him.
Great point. Great point. You got it. Yeah.
But, and you mentioned you knew Whitey Herzog's son, or what's?
I still know Jim Herzog. Okay. Yeah, we were high school. We graduated the same year together. We were friends from, grade school all the way up into high school. And we used to go over there, and I'll never forget, his stairwell was made out of bats. He was just a normal guy. He would show up. I mean, he'd come to basketball practice, and he'd come to baseball practice, and you would never know, you know, he was the coach for the Royals. Well, I think at the time, he was the coach for the Texas Rangers.
Did he ever get you any good tickets to the game?
Well, we could have, because Jimmy would take us up to the stadium. And we would mess around in the stadium. So we were able to watch from the dugout and things like that. Anytime we really wanted to go, we could go.
Nice.
So, you know, it's just like the 70s. The Chiefs, my school district, the stadiums in my school district when I went to high school. In the 70s, man, we got free tickets every weekend. We would sit behind the goalpost and get the balls.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Nice.
There was a balmy 10,000 people there, you know, at an 80,000 stadium. So
I'm sure you know that Whitey Herzog actually started out with these Mets here back in the 60s.
The Mets,
and he really wanted to be the manager, and the Mets offices didn't let him manage, so he left. But what could have been?
Yeah.
What could have been? Yes. The White Rat.
Yeah.
Although
he's over in St. Louis right now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's 92.
Just got the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's 92 years old, and who knows, maybe the Mets will You know how they the Mets love to bring back, or they used to. They used to love back to bring back guys who, you know, were past their prime. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Although, look, Tony La Russa came out of retirement and with the White Sox, right? That didn't work out too well. But I think Whitey might be.
I don't think Whitey's in good enough shape to be.
Chris, then growing up as a big baseball fan, give us your best baseball memory, whether it's going to the game, whether it's, I guess, when the Royals win. Well, which championship are you more excited about? The one that they won, you know, with George Brett, or the one that they won in 2000?
Well, so in 80, they lost to the Phillies. Grr. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, 85, we beat St. Louis. So that was the deal. And of course, they beat Whitey.
Right.
But
oh, that's right.
Probably my best is meeting Brooks Robinson, Harmon Killebrew, Boog Powell. I love those guys.
Yeah.
I just loved them. Nobody's as good as Brooks Robinson. George Brett, he's close, but Brooks is the best. I like the big first basemans. You know, I like, you know, Boog Powell. He was cool. How about Gaylord Perry?
Gaylord Perry, yeah.
Look who his last team was.
Mariners?
Royals.
Royals. Okay. You know, Boog Powell has a barbecue place out in Camden Yards. And Greg Luzinski has a place out in Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia.
Right. You know, remember the bowl? You remember the bowl? Greg Luzinski was the bowl?
Oh, God, yes. Luzinski? Yeah. What was he? 5'5" by 5'5"
A little tall on that, but he can hit it far. That's for sure.
He was on that Phillies team that won the championship.
Yeah,
you know, it was. You go there. Oh. It's amazing to
let me tell you the one I despise, Hug McGraw.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, because 1980. Okay.
1980. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But probably. Again, you're making me reminisce my baseball here, guys. How about Tony Gwynn?
Oh, he was so great. He was so great.
Oh, we just had on an author, Jeff, who wrote
what a guy.
What that was a good book.
Yeah.
On Tony Gwynn.
Scott Kingdon.
Pure hitter. Just
Scott Kingdon. Yeah, we had Scott Kingdon. Yeah. He wrote a book on Tony Gwynn. And you don't realize, like, just how good he was.
His strikeouts, he almost had none.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tony Gwynn. I was fortunate enough to go up to when I was at Marathon, I went up to the Hall of Fame. And Tony Gwynn had just gotten in. And he was one of my, of course, we're the same age, too, as Tony Gwynn and I are. And I just loved watching him play.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
One of the best.
Pure. He was pure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What a shame that he, the tobacco.
Yeah, I know.
That's what did him in.
I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah. You know, in this area, in our area, we have a lot of farming in this area. A lot of those farmers are still chewing tobacco.
Mm. Yeah.
And a lot of them are getting oral and tongue cancer and it's a mess.
Yeah. But Yeah, the Royal Stadium, that was pretty cool, the Kauffman Stadium. It was a nice experience. It's very nice there. The whole Kansas City area just.
Yeah, well, most people think we still have Indians. Well, we actually do, but we don't. There's a big reservation just west of Kansas City, Pottawatomie Reservation.
Right.
And so, yeah, everybody still thinks we ride around on horses and have Indians and, you know.
Well, Kansas City is a great place to go. I recommend everybody going to Kansas City barbecue and for baseball. I mean, go to the Negro Leagues Museum because that's a great place as well. Yes. Go check out all the barbecue joints. But, Chris, please let us know your social media. I know you have a Twitter and a Facebook and your website. So please let everybody know how to get in touch with you or how to find out about Three Little Pigs Barbecue.
Well, again, we're all over the web, Three Little Pigs Barbecue. And again, we're the guys out of Kansas City, Rubs and Sauces. social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I do YouTube, but they are not produced and overproduced. And I just do it down in my basement kitchen, and I just show you how easy it is. I don't make things complicated. Classes, again, I do classes all over the country. They're very minimally priced because I want people to show up. I want people to have fun. My goal is repeatability and being able to repeat what we do. I teach science. I teach how easy it is. I just like having fun. And again, my parents always taught me to be humble and kind, and I always will be till the day I can't do barbecue anymore.
We appreciate it. Your website, your Twitter or X is at Chris Marks BBQ. So if you want to follow him on that platform as well. Chris, you are a gentleman. We really thank you for your time. It's been a really enlightening to speak to you about barbecue because, you know, you're one of the best. So thank you very much for being on Baseball.
Thank you so much. And I'm very honored to be on your program. And I love talking baseball, as you can tell.
Yeah. So, he doesn't see Jeff. He doesn't love talking barbecue. He loves talking baseball.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And again, it was an honor. Thank you.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast, and if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Len. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out, Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
And thank you, Chris Marks, for joining us on the show. Leonard, he was fascinating.
Yes, and you know what I forgot to mention in the beginning, but now everybody heard, he loves baseball.
Oh, yes, he does.
Yeah, and had some very interesting stories. You know, he friends with Whitey Herzog's son. Perfect guest. As baseball and barbecue, loves them both. Yeah, he was great. You know what else is perfect, Jeff? BaseballBBQ.com. That's perfect. Baseball bat handle tools, grilling tools and accessories, cutting boards. I mean, go to BaseballBBQ.com. This is episode 220, and we're closer now than we were at episode 219 to the warmer weather, believe it or not. I mean, if you're not going out in the cold and you're waiting for the warm weather to grill, get your stuff ready. You know, don't wait till the last minute. Get your new tools. Get these beautiful tools and accessories now so that when you want to have them, they're there. So do that. And now, Jeff.
No, that's great advice, Len. I just want to tell everybody what they can do to get in touch with the show.
Oh, yeah.
Please. Give us a call, 516-855-8214. Email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, Baseball and BBQ. Instagram, Baseball and Barbecue, with barbecues all spelled out. We have a Twitter or X at Baseball and BBQ. Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Rate, review, subscribe, do all that stuff. But Leonard, do you have a barbecue quote?
Absolutely. Here we go. You ready?
It's time for the barbecue quote of the week.
Barbecue sauce is like a beautiful woman. If it's too sweet, it's bound to be hiding something. Lyle, love it. And Jeff?
Yes?
You have something for us. Let me give you your intro because everybody's been waiting for this and we're not going to make them wait any longer. Here we go. Ready? Jeff has a baseball rant.
Leonard, you know, it's only a week or two before the Hall of Fame announcement. And, you know, we love this time of year. I mean, it's the newest Hall of Famers who's getting in, and then we get anticipate the speeches come July. But I got to tell you, I'm getting sick and tired of what I see on social media, on Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff. I mean, enough already. You know, there's all these baseball sites, and I'm not going to name them all because I'm not going to remember them all. But there's always some clown or two who's going to put on, oh,
Barry Bonds, greatest baseball player ever lived, be in the Hall of Fame, prove me wrong. And then you have a whole litany of hundreds of comments and, oh, get it, enough already. We know what the issue is. Same thing with Pete Rose. Pete Rose, he should be in the Hall of Fame. But then you have all the comments. Enough already. Okay? It's enough. And there was one I found on Twitter. You're not going to believe this. This comparison, Yogi Berra and Bobby Abreu. Now, if you ever saw this, it's a stathead baseball. You can compare two players. And if it's highlighted in green, they have a better stat in that category. And you're looking at this, and Bobby Abreu has all these stats which are better than Yogi Berra. Guess what? Yogi Berra is much better than Bobby Abreu. Why would anybody put that and try to make that comparison? It's ridiculous. Enough already. We know if you don't like the way the Hall of Fame is being conducted, open up your own Hall of Fame. Put it in your basement in your house or put it on your wall in your apartment. Who cares? Enough already. Can we just move on?
Jeff, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's a silly comparison. Okay. Yogi Berra, who would catch both ends of a doubleheader. Yogi Berra, that is absolutely ridiculous. And by the way, if you want to know who's going in the Hall of Fame, just listen to episode 219. We had an outstanding group. You, me, Doug Scheiding, John Van Patella. We gave our arguments, and those are the people going in. So
of course.
There's no issue. So all these people with the social media, they should just listen to us. But no, come on. You're comparing different positions. You're comparing different eras. You're comparing Yogi Berra, one of the winningest players in baseball history, one of the most iconic, everything about him. I mean, we've had Larry Berra, Lindsey Berra. There's the movie. Yogi Berra has a documentary. When's Bobby Abreu's documentary coming out?
I don't think he's ever going to have one.
I mean, you want to say that he should be in the Hall of Fame? That's fine if you want to say that. But if you want to compare him to Yogi Berra, that's insane. So nice rant, Jeff. Very nice.
And Len, who do we have coming up?
Elizabeth Mason, fast pitch softball. You're going to love this.
Baseball and BBQ is extremely pleased to have on our next guest. Currently, she is the assistant coach for the University of Texas at Arlington softball team at Florida State University. She led the Seminoles to the 2018 national championship. Not only is she an assistant coach at UTA, but she completed her first season in the professional league when she led the Texas Smoke to the 2023 Women's Professional Fast Pitch Championship. A lover of the game, she gives lessons and works in camp. She's none other than Elizabeth Mason. Elizabeth, welcome.
Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the introduction.
Len, you want to start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know what, Elizabeth, I have to tell you, just before we came on, I was watching on YouTube the LSU Florida game. Fast pitch softball is wild. You're playing, the fundamentals are there, you know, all the things that are no longer in baseball. I mean, I'm seeing bunting. What a game. What a game. So take us back to that game where you guys won, right? Florida, you won that game.
Firstly, I'll have to correct you. Florida State. Florida is our rival.
Sorry, so Florida State.
No. But I'll give you a pass. but yes, LSU versus Florida State. The Super Regionals, my senior year, that was a crazy game. And I know you mentioned bunting. I think some baseball fans might argue that bunting should not be a part of the game, but softball, we will use every tool possible. We want to win. So that is definitely game two, is definitely a great example of just two competitive groups of athletes going at it, trying to scrap for a win. And it's always great to win like a big blowout game. But the games that are like back and forth, those are the ones that I like to be a part of. So
Elizabeth, when the pitcher releases the ball, the arm goes spinning around. When that ball gets released at that release point, how close is that to the batter? It seems
it's
like
about
it's
44
close.
Feet. I know the miles per hour is a lot slower than MLB, but the reaction time itself is actually right. A shorter reaction time than most MLB pitchers are throwing. So it is very close. It is very difficult. It takes a lot of training. It takes a lot of, you know, time and work, but there are things you can do as a hitter to make it a little bit easier for yourself. So that's where the competition, the IQ kind of comes into play of, you know, different teams trying to figure out different ways to, you know, ultimately get on base more frequently.
You know, I saw a clip as Lynn was talking about that you hitting a home run, and it was a very nice gesture that the ball was given to your father. And that was terrific. That must have been that home run must have meant something.
Yes. My parents definitely have a collection of FSU softball home runs. I have a few myself that I was a little greedy with and wanted to hang on to, but ESPN just loved my dad, and they always found a way to get him on camera, or I could do something and it's like Elizabeth Mason, immediately the cameras are like cutting across to my dad. But he's just a great personality, and outside of that, love him to death. He definitely helped me for sure on my journey with softball, and I wouldn't have made it to where I am today without him.
Is he the one who got you interested in softball or baseball or into the game?
Well, I wouldn't say he got me into it, but once I had expressed interest in playing softball, he was like 100% all in for it. I was doing cheerleading, so I was doing cheer and dance, which I loved dance, but as a cheerleader, for starters, I wanted to be a flyer, and my coach was like, you know, you need to be a base, like you're too strong. And I'm like, I want to be the flyer. So immediately I was like, this isn't fun anymore. But the people in the stands watched the football players. They weren't watching the cheerleaders. So I was like, I want to do a sport where people are watching me. So softball, me and my friend, we both quit cheerleading together. And we were like, let's try softball. And it worked out, man. It worked out.
Now, Elizabeth, what positions do you play?
I'm a catcher utility, so if it comes down to it, you can put me anywhere besides the pitcher's mound, and I'll figure it out. But what I'm most comfortable with, I like to say the right field line would be catching, first base, and right field. That's like my cup of tea, but if I needed to play somewhere else, I'll play anywhere else. I might even pitch. I have a really good changeup, but besides that, I'm no good.
I've noticed that the pitchers also wear a mask as well as the catcher. That mask must be, I guess, very light to wear.
There's definitely years of engineering that have, you know, kind of evolved the face mask over the years. The catcher's mask for sure. And I'm sure there's picture evidence of that. But I remember when face masks kind of first became a little more popular. And since then, the design, you know, it kind of tweaks a little bit lighter, but more sturdy, more protective. Definitely catcher's gear as well. They're always trying to make our gear lighter, so that way, you know, we can maneuver ourselves and move behind the plate, but it still needs to be protective as well. So over the years, kind of new technology, it changes a little bit. But yeah, pitchers have definitely, it's been more common more recently that you'll see pitchers wearing those masks.
Is it required at this point in the NCAA, or it's not required now? Okay.
No infield position outside of the catcher is required.
Gotcha.
But with how close you get, I would want to wear a mask.
Yeah.
I'd want to hide behind like one of those when they throw batting practice. I'd want one of those up there.
Yeah, even behind the net sometimes. Those balls, they look like they are coming for you sometimes. But yeah, I think it's definitely becoming more popular, and I can see why. You know, it's you're the first man on the line. It's a dangerous position to be in. And if wearing a face mask means that you're throwing your stuff better, more comfortably, and you're striking more girls out, then I'm all for it.
You know, Elizabeth, we had somebody on once And they would, I think it might have even been the women from the All-American Girls Baseball League, you know, the movie A League of Their Own was based on, right? And they were talking about baseball and softball. They're really, I mean, there are similarities, obviously, but what are some of the biggest differences between fast pitch softball and baseball?
Up until recently, I would say the biggest difference, in my opinion, is like the length of the game. Like personally, sometimes it's a struggle for me to sit through an entire baseball game because it just takes so long. But I know with like the introduction of the pitch clock and the games are definitely moving a lot faster, but everything in softball is smaller. You know, people like talk about the field size, like it must be so easy. But everything is also a lot quicker pace, like balls coming off the bat, we're a lot closer. So whereas you have more time in baseball, the field is bigger. So it's maybe harder to hit a home run. The field size is also like really impactful in, I guess, the way softball's played and baseball's played. And then I guess the biggest difference that most people would notice would be like the pitcher's mound versus like the baseball mound that baseball pitchers throw off of, as well as accompanying that, I guess, the leadoff rule on the pitcher's circle. And, you know, baseball, you can step off the bags while the pitcher still has the ball. But in softball, you can't actually leave the bag until the ball is released from the pitcher's hand. So that would be like how baseball players get your lead. You would be out in softball if you did that. So that's
so it's harder. Is so, Elizabeth, is stealing harder then?
Yeah, I don't know if it's harder. There are definitely some nuances to it a little bit, like reading certain pitches. If you can pick a pitcher and you get a gist for what pitches she's throwing, then maybe like if you see a changeup coming, then you know you might have a little bit more time. The ball's heavier, so the throw might not be as quick as like a baseball would be. So that might make up for the fact that you don't get to leave as early. But I think stealing in general is pretty difficult. That's why not everyone can do it. But I'm not the fastest, but I'm going to get my handful of stolen bases in there.
I tell you, watching the game on ESPN and all the other cable channels, very impressed by the way the college students, college players play the game. I mean, you're right. The bases are small, are, you know, shorter distance, and the quickness that you girls go through, like, you know, a hot shot to third base. I mean, wow, it's right there. And it's great game. Great game to watch, actually. Everybody should check it out.
I agree. Everyone should watch softball. Come on, guys.
Yes. Yeah. You've got two converts right here. We're as honest as they come. And I have to tell you, I hadn't really watched it played at that level. I've seen fast pitch softball, but played at that level. You guys were, and it was impressive. So I definitely, yeah.
I would recommend to everyone to go and look up like Women's College World Series highlight reels. That way you get to see the big moments and those kind of draw you in like, wow, like that's actually pretty interesting. That actually could keep my attention. And then you find the team nearby you. So that way you can, you know, just like you would for any other home team, you find your home team, you know that there's going to be exciting things happening. Like you've seen it before, but now you have a team to root for. And the growth that has happened in our sport in the past, like 5-10 years alone is amazing. It is insane the amount of, you know, just money that's coming into softball, support that's coming into softball, attention that's coming into softball. It is crazy. And I hope nothing but just increased exponential growth on that. And I want everyone to watch softball. I think it is amazing. I can't say anything but positive things.
We know in men's baseball, NCAA baseball, we have the powerhouses and Arizona State, you know, Vanderbilt and all those. What are the powerhouses in softball? I mean, I know FSU is very big there, but NLSU, any other big schools that are,
yes,
you know, which should definitely we keep an eye on?
So I think the Power Five, just like in any other sport, there's always like a high-end chance that you're going to play at that higher level. But right now, OU, Oklahoma, they are definitely the top competitors. That's kind of like the target on the back school right now. They have a ton of heavy hitters. It's like everyone that comes off their bench is your best hitter. And it's difficult to beat teams that refuse to go down without a fight in the batter's box. Like, defense is so, so, so important, but their offense is just overwhelmingly powerful. And without like a fierce plan of attack with them, like mentally working their batters and things like that, you do not stand a chance. And that is why, in my opinion, FSU softball is the only school that really comes close to OU consistently. Like, we lost to them. We had them one game, lost to them two games my senior year. 2 years later, again, that's the next World Series championship matchup, is because FSU softball and Coach Lonnie Alameda and the things that she kind of brings to her program, it's so much softball IQ. You work and you work and you work and you work hard, just like any other team when it comes to defense, offense, like physical strength, nutrition. But the softball IQ, she is unmatched. She knows the game so well. And that is why, despite Oklahoma being so, like, they are head above heels when it comes to their offense, like, they will scrap with those batters. And FSU softball is something special, definitely.
You know, Elizabeth, you keep saying OU. When I hear you say OU, I think Ohio University.
Ohio, that's why I had to follow up with Oklahoma, because in softball world, OU, everyone knows that's Oklahoma. But and that's where the World Series is, too, is in OKC, Oklahoma City. So it's like they are like up there. But oh, I do know there's like who's their rival? You have the Ohio State. What are they? Buckeyes?
Well, Ohio University, their rival is Miami. Miami of Ohio. Ooh, you know, because they're not Ohio State. They're
okay. You know. See, there I am lacking in my football knowledge.
That's OSU, Ohio OSU. State. Right.
The OSU is Oklahoma State.
So, and Elizabeth, in baseball, and it seems to be becoming more and more commonplace, one of the big injuries, especially for pitchers, but you see it in regular fielders too, is Tommy John surgery. Is there an injury? I'm going to assume, and I shouldn't, but based on the way the ball is pitched, that maybe Tommy John surgery is not an issue, but maybe it is. But is there an injury that is more common to softball players?
Yeah, Tommy John still happens from time to time. I've met a handful of girls who have had the surgery and go through with that due to injury. But I would say with pitching, I definitely see more like rotator cuff injuries, like torn, like you get in there with the labrums and stuff like that. And then I don't know why, but there definitely are quite a good amount of like ACL, MCL type of injuries. I think just because it's so quick, fast paced, and the change of direction movements are like it happens on a dime. But ACL injuries are definitely not uncommon in the sport of softball. I've played with girls who have torn one just to tear the other one, you know, once they're cleared to play. Like, it's crazy how it happens, but that definitely is a reoccurring injury, I would say.
Yeah. And are there some pitchers who are ambidextrous in the softball that they can pitch with both arms?
I'm sure there are some who claim to be ambidextrous, but I have never seen or heard of a pitcher who has had relative success throwing on both sides of with their both arms. But I would love to see it.
Elizabeth, you played at FSU during the pandemic, and I'm reading online here that you were instrumental in trying to get the game played with an online petition. Could you tell us about that?
Oh, yes. That feels like so long ago, but I remember when we had just come back from Florida. And we were about to head out to Duke for a series out there, and because they were in our conference. So we were about to start packing up, and we got the notification, I guess, that not just the game was canceled, but that season would be canceled. Because at first there was kind of murmurs that like the game was going to be canceled, but then it very quickly became season was going to be canceled. And there had been like small, I don't know, conversations, but apparently there was talks that the NCAA was just going to kind of have an oh well type of attitude towards what had happened. And we were really just getting into the swing of things with season, and we wanted to play. And for our senior class, it was like the last game that they just played, where they didn't even know was going to be their last game, could have been their last games ever playing. And that just wasn't going over very well for us. So we were, you know, just talking to the other athletes even, and talking to our friends. We were like, there's no way we, with enough voices, we should be able to, you know, impact this and make a difference. So we kind of started the petition of wanting to, you know, come to some kind of like, not just not to cancel everything altogether. Like, let's just see what can happen. Maybe we can play. But then we actually joined with a petition that was like, and if we don't play, like, to get the year back of eligibility. And that's kind of what took off. And luckily we got that year back, and it was, you know, it was good just to know that some people got a chance to play again, just out of such an unexpected situation, circumstances.
Now, Elizabeth, so let's fast forward to the Texas, I guess it's the women's professional fast pitch. Is that just in Texas? It just started that league. Take us now. That's professional softball.
Yes. So right now there are two professional softball leagues. You have the WPF, Women's Professional Fast Pitch, and that is more like a traditional league that you would think of where you're playing. It's not just in Texas. There's a team in Oklahoma. There's a team in Florida. There's a team in Alabama. And this was actually the second year of the league. Last year was like kind of like the trial run. And then we added more teams. And so we're supposed to be expanding again going into next season. But the other side of that is AU, Athletes Unlimited, and they kind of have their own structure. They're like a points-based thing, and, you know, you play on teams, but the teams switch kind of like week to week, and you get points for yourself based off your performance. So they have, I think it's softball, basketball, volleyball, and they just kind of do they're like their own league into their own right, I guess. But yes, so I played with the Texas Smoke out of Austin, but there were three other teams as well. So it wasn't just in Texas, but it felt like a lot of times we were in Texas, because the amount of games we play, it was like so much in such a short period of time.
And how does that work as far as you have a contract that, you know, it's other professional sports, you have a contract, and players sign different contracts?
Yeah, every player, your contract is kind of personalized to you, depending on, you know, there were some girls who were only going to be there for part of season, but still wanted to play. So, you know, I'm sure their contracts would look different than there are players who do get 2-year contracts. There's players coming out of the drafts that are drafted and get contracts. So it's all very dependent on, I guess, for one, your body of work as an athlete, how long you've been in the league also kind of changes things. I'm sure the more that you have experience with that, then I'm sure your contract gets a little more refined. Things look a little bit more different. But yeah, it is pretty standard, I would say. You have a contract and you get paid.
But now, what you get paid, it used to be that the you know, the Major League Baseball players would play the season, and then during the off season they had to work. So can I assume that right now, the you know, in the inaugural seasons of this league, nobody's becoming a nobody's getting rich. Let's put it that way.
I mean, there are definitely players who make money that they can live off of, but that is not typically just from the league. That is just from them and themselves as a product. Like Jocelyn Allo, for example, she's one of the most popular softball players right now. She played at OU and she is just a hands down phenomenal human being. So you cannot speak to a softball player who doesn't know who Jocelyn Allo is. Her contract and how she negotiates that is definitely going to be different than even someone like me, who I still played at like Power Five, Florida State. I'm a national champion. Like, my body of work is extensive and it speaks for itself. But even in that aspect, there are players who, you know, it's like that contract has to be like a legitimate, like a contract that she can live off of. But even for most players, we're in a 3-month season. Your contract means for that 3 months. So if you don't have work outside of season, then you're not going to be living off of what you get paid. It's good pay for the 3 months that you're there.
Right. I gotcha. Okay.
So Elizabeth, we have a question from our good friend, Doug Scheiding, who set up this interview, and he apologizes for not being able to make it, but he asked, was it true in the WPF finals when you were batting, you hit a home run and told not to run the first base, just hit the dinger?
I didn't actually hit the home run. So I had an injury and I wasn't really, I wasn't able to run at all. So they just wanted me to go in and hit. But whatever happens, they were like, if you do anything but hit a home run, they were like, don't run. And I'm like, okay, like, I won't. And so I went and I hit a ball kind of in the gap. And so I started running because I was like, I'm not just going to stay. And so then I got to first base and they threw the ball trying to get somebody else. So then I ran to second and they were like, what are you doing? Like, I was only supposed to run. I was only supposed to like start walking if it was a home run, but there was no way I was going to just be like, okay, get me out.
Instincts take over, right?
Yeah, it was just, it happened faster than I registered.
Is it true that former Major Leaguer Brandon Phillips is involved with the Texas Smoke?
He's the owner, yeah. Brandon Phillips is the owner of the team. He actually co-owns with his wife, Jade, who is WWE now, I think.
Oh, really?
So yeah, she's like legit. She is a cool woman to be around.
Now, Elizabeth, the Texas Smoke, knowing Texas and knowing it's called the Texas Smoke, post game, pre game, brisket every day. What was?
I wish that would be funny. That would be awesome. No, the Texas Smoke. It has to do with more so the heritage. They have a post up that actually goes into detail about it, but we were fed good. You know, we're not short on food, but brisket every day. Now that would have been nice. That would have been
Doug could have made it actually.
Right. Exactly. That would have been 10 out of 10.
So tell us about your career now at the University of Texas at Arlington. You're assistant coach there.
Yes, I'm an assistant coach there. I get to coach with Fale Lua. So she played in the league as well. She played for the Oklahoma City Spark. So she was an opponent of mine, but one of my good friends and teammates from Florida State, Sydney Sherrill, she also plays with the Oklahoma City Spark. And so whenever we were playing against each other and I would be catching up with Sid, like I kind of met Faw, and Sydney would always be like, you guys will get along so great. Like, you guys should hang out. So she kind of introduced us. And when we did, whenever we did kind of interact, it was a great interaction. And she ended up telling me that UTA was looking for an assistant coach. So that's kind of how the connection was made. And I interviewed and it went amazing. And they brought me on. So I work with Kara Dill. She's an All-American pitcher from LSU. She's coached Texas Tech. She coached at Texas A&M. So she has like a pretty extensive history in coaching, and she's very smart. She's the head coach and a great coach to be learning from. And then there's also the other assistant coach, Joe, who she does a lot with the defensive stuff, was with Oregon. So there's just a lot of knowledge that it's like I'm teaching the girls, but I'm also learning so much in my first year of coaching, and it's been amazing.
So what happens when UTA plays FSU?
When UTA plays FSU, we better beat them. You know, I hope that it would be cool if I could set something up with Coacha and see if we could get like a fall game in or get it on the schedule somehow. But one thing about it, I'm a competitor, and I may have gotten some of that competitiveness instilled in me while I was at FSU. But if we're playing them, I want to beat them just like I want to beat anybody else.
Elizabeth, you grew up in Florida, I believe in the Tampa area. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
So now your life is in Texas. How's the difference? What's the difference between Florida and Texas?
Oh, no offense, but I feel like people just can't really drive that well out here. Every day, like Florida. Okay, in Florida, people can't drive because they don't want anyone to cut them off. So people are always bumper to bumper. Like everyone's going the same speed. People are usually going a little bit slower in the right lane, but it's bumper to bumper because everyone's like, you're not getting in front of me. But in Texas, like I would not be surprised to see a car just completely driving the way on the road. Like every day is like, I see a car accident, and it's not just a regular car accident. It's like a 3-car accident, like lines lined all the way up. And I'm like, what are people doing out here? But besides that, I love Texas. Like the weather, I like it warm. I know it's going to get cold here soon, but I'm hanging on to the warmth that is left. The people I have met out here have been great so far. And I love where I live right now. So I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Texas, be good to me.
Well, Elizabeth, I happened to see an interview that you did. It was a short interview, and you were talking about yourself, and you mentioned you're aggressive, you like to win, you guarantee a championship at that time. But one thing that you said, and I've got to ask you, give you an opportunity, because you never know who might be listening to this. You said that you could see yourself competing on either The Voice or American Idol. Okay.
That was like a dream of mine.
All right. So Jeff hates my singing. So Jeff is kind of a judge. But so maybe he'll be like the Simon Cowell of the show. But
no way. I'm a little nasally. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a little bit under the weather. So
you're not going to. So you won't sing anything for us, just off the cuff?
Oh my gosh, I even sing? I'm not like that great of a singer. It was just more of like a thing I wanted to do. Oh my gosh, you know any good songs?
How about Take Me Out to the Ball Game? Give us
I will not be able to sing that song good.
I could sing with you, but then Jeff would have to... You'd see anger.
I'm too embarrassed. I can't.
Oh, I'll start you out. Come on.
Okay.
Me out to the ball game.
Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if we ever come back. Let's root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes are out at the old ball game.
See, now excellent. Elizabeth would move on to the next round. Len gets the X.
Elizabeth, you're going to Hollywood.
Thank you. You guys are too nice.
You're very, very good. It's been a pleasure to get to talk to you. Doug is going to be very sorry that he missed you.
Oh, we'll have to bring me back.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. We love that. What's next for your coaching now, but you're still going to play in the league? Is that?
Yes, I would love to play again. I've been talking with the Smoke about coming back, and it would be really nice because last season I found out like a month and a half, 2 months before tryouts about tryouts. So I was like, had taken a couple years off, and I was like, you know what? I can do it. Why not? So this year it would be great to like have the facilities I have and like have a full year to train. And I'm already on the field working like a full 8-9 months ahead of, probably even more than that, 10 months ahead of schedule of what I was last season. So definitely looking forward to coming back. I loved last season for what it was, but I know that with the kind of training that I'll have this year, that I'll probably hopefully be happier with the next season.
It's a new league. It's a sport that a lot of people, you know, a lot of people think of, you know, softball, they think of the beer league and all that stuff. And again, it's played, what precision? I mean, it's just played, there's so much skill there. How was attendance? Do you think that this is something that is going to catch on? More teams will come into the league and this will expand.
Yeah, I think the attendance, Oklahoma City, their home fields are the fields where the Women's College World Series is held at. And they have fans that run deep. So a lot of girls that played at Oklahoma ended up playing with the Spark. So playing there were definitely like the best attendance. It was awesome. Our games had really good attendance, but their stadium is much bigger than our stadium was. I definitely think that it will catch on. It will continue to grow. It has been growing. I think softball in college is more invested into right now because, you know, it's your college. It's deeper than just the sport. But I definitely think with the introduction of like NIL and kind of being more attached to the player outside of just the sport and the school will bring fans along with. Like Jocelyn Allo is a great example again. She is a player that made fans when she was in college. So now she is a huge asset to the league, frankly, because people want to come watch her play. So it's like she brings a whole different level of viewership. I think more of that happening will continue to grow the game. And I don't remember who I was talking to. I think it might have been Coacha, but just about looking at the first 100 years of Major League Baseball and what it mm-hmm. looked like. And you look at professional softball, it's like we're just barely getting our footing, but we are in right. a place considering what it could be, you know? So we just want to leave it better for those who are coming next while still appreciating, you know, the opportunities we have that maybe those before us didn't.
Absolutely.
Well, that's terrific. And we hope it grows and grows. Like I said, watching it on ESPN, the Women's College World Series, it's really fun to watch. And, you know, we are speaking with NCAA champion Elizabeth Mason. Elizabeth, as we wrap up, you have some Instagram or Twitter or X, whatever it's called, if you want to tell people where they can follow you.
Yeah, for sure. So my Twitter is at emason55 and my Instagram is _ElizabethMason. So I'm pretty active on both. And if you find me, say hi, feel free. Let me know that you came from the podcast. Comment barbecue or something, like a little barbecue emoji. And I'll know that you came from the podcast.
I like that. I like that very much.
Thank you very much. Best of luck to you, and we will be rooting for you. Hopefully, the WPF gets picked up by ESPN yes. and shown all over the world.
Yes, that would be amazing. And thank you guys for the opportunity just to come and talk and grow the game.
We enjoyed it. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. You know, Jeff, even though he wasn't in the interview with us, our friend Doug Scheiding, his footprint is still on the episode because it was Doug who introduced us to Elizabeth Mason. And true. We thank him for that. And we thank Elizabeth Mason. And we thank Chris Marks. And we thank everyone who's listening to this. And we want everybody to know we are presented by Bet Online. It is where the game starts. But after, what is this, 5 hours, 6 hours of podcast? I don't know. I think it's time that we're not starting. We're ending.
With the poet.
Shel Krakowski.
And the musician.
Dave Dresser.
And the song.
Baseball always brings you home.
And we'll see you next week on episode 221.